Hello there, football fans, and welcome to Thursday's Soccer Central podcast. James Charmonnier alongside John Molinaro. A really busy show today. Later, we'll be talking some TFC with Laura Armstrong of the Toronto Star. We'll get to some Champions League discussions after one really good game, one really crap game this past week. You're frowning there, J-Mo?
You're right.
Man City, Real Madrid?
No, I'm in completely agreement with you.
But we've got to start with what's going to be the big story, is the big story, has been the big story for a long time. It comes from the Premier League, of course. It comes from the city of Leicester. This weekend, all that the hopes of every neutral sports fan in the world are up for grabs. Leicester City could become champions of England if they can beat Manchester United, or if Spurs lose on Monday to
Chelsea. Stamford Bridge.
Right, so there's options. The magic number is 3 for Leicester. It really is utterly insane. Let's head now to Leicester. The Leicester Mercury's very own James Sharp. He admits he's a huge Leicester fan, but he's also objective and professional. James, I'll tell you right now, where I'm sitting, it is inevitable. Leicester are going to become English champions. Answer this. Do you believe that?
Just about. I know. Everyone who always asks me is like, come on, you know, it's there. Your name's on the trophy, and it has been for however long. But I think it's ingrained in Leicester City fans who have been not in this position before, because goodness me, no one's been in this position before, but have been in positions where they look like they're going to do well and then will snatch despair out of the jaws of glory in the most kind of dramatic way. So the emotions have ranged pretty much from being happy and fun, and it's all been a great joy, to warm the seats of the big boys with the kind of feeling that ultimately they would take their rightful place. Then we had kind of the fear crept in when you looked at it and thought, hang on about it, that they should do this now. And sickness and nausea and watching the Tottenham game against West Brom was the pinnacle of feeling sick about this season. But now I think eventually, looking at it with just 3 points needed, still an if for Leicester City fans, but I think you can just about start to enjoy it now.
James, give us a sense of what the mood, what the atmosphere, what the buzz is like in the Leicester Mercury newsroom amongst you and your colleagues, but also in the city itself, on the streets. What is the city like as the Foxes approach clinching what would be a historic and improbable Premier League title?
Well, it's full of media and journalists and radio presenters and TV presenters like yourselves kind of in the city trying to get their own piece of this unbelievable story. So in the office, we've been inundated with requests from all countries around the world. It's got to the point where we probably need a map to keep a note of all the countries that have been interested in this. So we felt really, as a city, that we are the centre of the kind of footballing world at the minute. And like this kind of humble city in the heart of England is currently under the gaze of the whole world, and the whole world wants Leicester to succeed. It's really quite strange for a city that's kind of so low key as this one. In regards to the whole city itself, I think there's been a sense of quiet pride. There's been a bit of a sense that no one really wants to boast about it too much, because I think, like I just said, no one likes to get ahead of themselves here, because we've seen this team or this club fall away right at the last. It feels different this time, I have to admit that. But so there's been a bit, it's not been, you know, you walk down the streets and you're not seeing banners of Leicester City flying everywhere, you're not seeing shirts and flags in windows everywhere. And a lot of people have come over and kind of asked, why is this happening? I think it's because they don't like to kind of shout about it, and I think the fans are just happy to just carry on going and just get over the line, and then eventually then they'll be able to celebrate. So there's definitely a buzz, but it's not a shouting from the rooftops buzz just yet.
James, there's so many great individual stories, be it Riyad Mahrez, the emerging superstar, the late bloomer in Jamie Vardy, N'Golo Kanté, you know, the engine of the team. you could talk about Robert Huth, the journeyman at the back there.
Fuchs.
And then you got Fuchs, of course, you know, great signing by Ranieri, the gaffer. Who is the face of this story?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, like you say, everyone has their own little story. And there is, even though everyone's got their own different story, there is a kind of like an undercurrent here between all of them. There's like a theme that holds them all together, which is the sense of all of them having something to prove. Obviously, Ranieri having his torrid time with Greece. And like you say, you look at Riyad Mahrez, told he was too spindly legged, too skinny to be a top-class player. Same with N'Golo Kanté, told he was too small. Jamie Vardy released, as everyone knows his story, released as a teenager by his hometown club. Kasper Schmeichel living under the shadow of his father for so many years. Wes Morgan being a kind of run-of-the-mill second division player, getting his chance. And players like Robert Huth and Danny Simpson were surface requirements of their clubs. So all of them have got something to prove. Who the face of it is such a great question. I think when people... Now, if I go somewhere outside of Leicester and mention Leicester, I think the first word or first name that people mention is Vardy, I think, because while Mahrez has been superb and is rightly Player of the Year, I think people look at Vardy as embodying the Leicester City team more than maybe others do, because of the fact that of where he's come from. And not that long ago playing non-league football, and the way he goes about playing the game, and the way he's just non-stop, complete effort, charging down lost causes, playing with his heart and his soul on his sleeve. And as you've seen it, sometimes that can bubble over and cross the line. But I think it's that heart on his sleeve thing that Leicester fans especially relate to and can adhere to. So I think if it's anyone, it's probably going to be Vardy.
James, Leicester isn't—it's not a metropolis in the sense that Manchester or the city of Liverpool or the city of London are. It's a much smaller city. I'm wondering how much has that played a part in Leicester's success, and the fact that I wonder if the players sort of identify more with the city, that there's more of a connection in that because it's not such a big city, and that because they're all—it's a tightly knit community. Whereas if they were playing for a London club. There's a lot of things going on in London, and maybe they're not as connected. I wonder if there's that connection between the players and the fact that Leicester's a smaller city, and that's played a part in this.
Well, what certainly played a part is the connection between the fans and the players. I mean, I've not seen, especially at this club, and also from an outsider's viewpoint looking at other clubs, ever seen a connection between players and fans that's so strong as this one. I mean... If you're at a game, the players will fire the fans up, and when the fans see the players, maybe that they need a boost, they will then work in harmony and fire them up. The connection is phenomenal. Whether that comes down to it being a small city, potentially, because this is the only kind of professional football team in the city, so there's no split loyalties between fans within the city, so in that sense it is. But I think there are comparisons between the fans as a group and the team. You look at Leicester as a city is a very multicultural city. They were one of the first cities where there were where ethnic minorities were of the majority, and it's a cosmopolitan city where there are lots and lots of cultures and lots of races and religions and creeds all mixing in together in a very harmonious community. And if you look at the Leicester City team, it's something quite similar. I think it's 14 or 15 different nationalities all playing together as one team and all kind of speaking one language, to kind of use the football language cliche. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think there is definitely a connection between the two. And I think because it's such a homely community feel to the city and the fans, I think that kind of rubs off on them.
Yeah, according to Wikipedia, which is never ever wrong, the population is 337,000.
Wow.
So it's a pretty small city. We're speaking to James Sharp of the Leicester Mercury. James, I hope the fans are just enjoying this for what it is, but I know sports fans, I know some of them are probably looking forward a little bit to next season and the summer and what might happen to this team. Now, the ownership, they've been very ambitious from day one. They had some pretty strong statements when they first bought the club about their ambitions for Champions League football. That being said, this summer is going to be absolutely fascinating because the market is hot for Leicester players. They could make an enormous profit if they chose to. Do you think, though, they are very much in this for the long haul and will do all they can to retain their star players?
Oh, definitely. Like you hinted at, when the news took over, they came out with the statement that they wanted to spend, off the top of my head, I think it's £180 million to get into the top, into Europe within 5 years. And people, even Leicester fans, scoffed at that and thought, hang on, this is just owners saying big things just to make a big statement. But you look at it now and they've done more than that in a shorter space of time. But this isn't a kind of, what's good, I think, about the Leicester owners is, they aren't the kind of owners that are in charge and want to do things. They want to pick the team. They want to have a say on transfer policy. They stand back. They put loads of money into the club, and not just kind of throw money at it. They build in the right areas. They've built the training ground. They've built the sports science staff. They've built the medical staff. So they toy with it or meddle with it. They also wrote off all of the club's debt. I think about £114 million worth of debt. They wrote that off. So Leicester are completely debt-free for the first time in a long, long, long time. So, yeah, they are definitely in this for the long haul. When it comes to the squad and next season, there is no reason why Leicester have to sell their best players. Leicester are no longer in a position where they need to sell. They're financially secure. So it's a case then of whether your players want to stay. And I can't really see any reason why they wouldn't do. They're going to be playing for potentially the Premier League champions in the Champions League. And they're going to be playing every week in the stars of the show. So what's going to be the key, I think, is how they build. Because clearly with Champions League football, and all the extra fixtures that brings, they're going to have to add to the squad. But Leicester have always been a team and a club that has added very carefully and added careful, the kind of people that add to this spirit that you see every week when they play. They don't, no matter how good a player is, if they don't think that he's the right kind of person to fit in to that club and buy into that giving everything ethos, then they won't sign him. The key is going to be this summer is whether they carry on with that, because they're going to be in a position where they can probably attract and afford real big name stars now, but it's going to be a balance between signing those kind of players that can take you to another level, but also making sure that they're not the kind of players that might upset the team spirit that's got them there in the first place.
What do you make of this whole Francesco Totti rumour? Would have been great 10 years ago, but it's out there. I'm sure it's just some bored journalist making things up, but it's a pretty sexy rumour if nothing else.
Yeah, it is, and I think it is. I think it is just that. Ranieri got asked about it in his press conference after, I think it was the Swansea game. We got asked about it in Italian by an Italian journalist, and he replied in Italian, but I think even those of us with broken Italian could kind of work out when he said speculation. It's a romantic kind of Italian player, like Italian rumour, but Totti just does not fit into Leicester's transfer policy. Leicester look at signing young players with the potential to grow and develop. You look at that with Mahrez and with Damari Gray, who they brought in. They look to sign younger players with the potential to develop, and always they're always building for the future. With a player like Totti, he isn't building for the future, is it? So I think While it, like you said, the rumour might be quite romantic, I don't see there's much in it.
We've talked a lot about Claudio Ranieri during this segment, James, but we probably shouldn't forget Nigel Pearson. Obviously did a fantastic job towards the end of last season, helping the Foxes avoid their relegation. What has been his influence? How much credit should he be given for for setting the table, essentially, for Claudio Ranieri.
Yeah, I mean, Pearson's influence in the team getting to where it is should never, ever, ever be underplayed. It is a huge, he plays such a huge role, especially in his second period here. He took over from Sven-Göran Eriksson. And when he came back to the club, he had to completely rebuild a squad, which was made up of signings by Sven, which were basically aging, overaged players that didn't really... They were basically here for a final payoff. So he had to rebuild this team, as well as continue to push for promotion to the Premier League. And he did that brilliantly, especially with his backroom staff who are clearly still there. But Pearson is so kind of, he was so crucial to get them there. That should never really be underplayed. I mean, in his full seasons at Leicester, if you go across both his reigns, he won League One and took Leicester out of the third tier of the first chance. Then he got them to the playoffs. Then when he came back the second time in his first full season, he got them back to the playoffs again, where they lost out to that famous Anthony Knockaert missed penalty at Watford. And then the following season, they won the league at a canter, and then the following season, he kept them up against all the odds. And what he did in that season was that he managed to keep a belief in the squad, which other teams probably wouldn't have had they been bottom of the table for what was 140 days, I think it was. Even then, even though they were playing quite well, but just not quite getting the results, they managed to maintain this team spirit that when the chips were down and they needed to perform right at the death, they managed it. So, in short, Pearson should never be underplayed in this. But having said that, what Ranieri has done is he has then taken them on to the next level. He's added a defensive stability that is just unbelievable. I've not seen the like of it at this club. I mean, if Leicester were ever 1-0 up in previous seasons, you'd always think, oh God, there's 5 minutes to go. 1-0 up, they're probably going to concede here, and then they would concede, and you'd kind of nod your head and go, yeah, we thought that was coming. But now, Leicester take the lead, and you just think that's it. You might as well pack all your bags and go home. They don't even look like conceding. So he's brought that in, and also he's just given players like Vardy and Mahrez just the freedom to go and perform, go and express themselves, and go and win them games. And he's done brilliantly with the press as well. I think this season, Pearson obviously had his moments.
Oh yeah,
with the press. But I think a lot of that was to kind of take the pressure off his players. But he found a funny way of doing it, shall we say? Whereas Ranieri has done it kind of the other way by being charming and friendly and fun. And just kind of taking the pressure off by just telling his players to go and enjoy themselves, which they clearly are.
Yeah, I think the likability of the team has taken a big shot in the arm this season. It's been a lot of fun to watch. A magical season could come to a wonderful end this weekend. We'll find out. James, I hope it does for you. If it does, just do your work, get your deadline, and then just enjoy yourself and really embrace what you've seen this season. Thanks, pal. Really appreciate this.
No worries at all. Hopefully I'll speak to you soon.
Cheers.
That is James Sharp of the Leicester Mercury. And I got some people on Twitter this week, and I was saying how wonderful it is, one of the great shocks in sports history.
Sure.
And most people agree with that. But some naysayers out there, I tell you, they're saying, well, it's only because, you know, Chelsea were bad and Man City weren't very good and United having an off year. And so it shouldn't be seen as a big shock. What are these people on? What do you want?
No, I mean, that's a pretty cynical view. I mean, I mean, maybe to a certain extent, the play of teams like Chelsea and Man United did play a role, but you've got to give Leicester full credit. Since last April, they've been the best team in England consistently, yeah, bar none. And that's regardless of how Chelsea and Manchester United and Manchester City and Liverpool have done. They have been the best team in England.
It's the ultimate cynicism to go down that path.
Absolutely.
If you ask me.
Yeah.
No one is more cynical than Toronto FC fans. I think it's probably fair to say, given what they've endured over recent seasons. But that's about to change, we think. TFC, you see, is playing really well indeed, sitting third in the East right now. Best defense in Major League Soccer.
Incredible.
5 so far they've conceded, just 5 goals.
In 7 games.
Yeah.
All amazing. Road games.
against Portland this weekend in Portland, their last of the road games to start this season. Back home next week on May the 7th.
Finally.
Oh, about time, eh?
Yeah.
It's been great so far, though. Laura Armstrong, she writes all things TFC for the Toronto Star. Laura, welcome to the show. TFC, a defensive powerhouse. Do you agree with that? Do you believe that? What's going on?
If I hadn't seen it with my own two eyes, I would not believe it. But yeah, it seems like they are a defensive powerhouse. And 8 games on the road is the best test for that. So they really have proven themselves to be a defensive-minded team. I think that Drew Moore has done massive things at the center of that back four. He just brings a calmness to that back line that I don't think that they had before. And his relationship with Clint Irwin is very good. They already had good pieces in Damian Perkey and in Justin Morrow, but the new additions along with Stephen Betashore have been just huge for this team.
Laura, obviously it's, you know, key additions, as you mentioned, in Drew Moore and Clint Irwin, and let's not forget Stephen Betashore and Will Johnson. But so all of that towards the back end, obviously it's played a big role in, you know, the greater defending ability. But what about just the mentality and the way that Greg Vanney has set this team up? And it seems like he's really sort of focused them on establishing this defensive identity early on and really kind of building upon that foundation.
Yeah, and I think that something that Michael Bradley has always said, and he did say at the end of last season when they finished in a very disappointing fashion, he has always sort of touted the mentality of that team. And I think people questioned it last year, but I think they've brought in the right players to sort of add to that mentality, and they're starting to find an identity that I don't think was, like, I don't think the team had an identity at all last year, and I think that they're starting to find that. They started with this defensive-minded thing, but I think that one thing that people maybe aren't touching on as much, considering the defensive record, is really what sort of speaks to fans right now, is the fact that this team has really grown in the last 8 games. They started off very defensive-minded, but as you could see, you know, in last weekend's game against Montreal, that some of the attacking flair that they were known for last year is starting to come into play as well. And I think that's very positive from Toronto FC. And I think that shows the mentality that this team has, that they are good. They're confident in their defensive-minded tactics, but at the same time, they know that they're going to have to score, and they know that they're going to have to play maybe some prettier football than they've played so far in the first 8 games. And they're starting to show that, and to do so on the road is something that I don't think that the team last year would have been able to do.
It's a great point, and therein lies the big question. They're home next week, and we often see teams, and we see all the time, we see a very different team on the road than you'll see at home. They're far more open at home, far more attacking, and they're quite happy to sit back and defend on the road. What do you think we're going to see from TFC next week when they come back to BMO Field? Because it is going to be dangerous to open up too much when they've actually achieved something playing in a more defensive style.
Yeah, and I think they've talked a lot about how they're going to open up come next week. And I don't know necessarily if you want to. Like, they're doing very well. Their defensive record is going very well for them. And maybe they will be more comfortable at home. But one thing that Greg Vanney said to me this week is that he was concerned that the emotions of opening day would get to the team. He said that last year when they lost 2-1 to Houston Dynamo after coming back from 7 games on the road, that they came out looking flat because they were just bogged down by the motion of the day. So I think that maybe for the first game of the home opener, it would be, you know, thought it would be a good idea for them to keep that defensive mindedness at the forefront, especially against a team like FC Dallas that has pace and is young and is very confident right now. If they want to get a result from that game, which is going to be a tough game, then I think that they need to focus on just being defensive first. And maybe it's not the most beautiful style for a home opener, but I don't think any of the fans will care if they get a result.
Sebastian Giovinco scored a brace last weekend in the 2-0 win against Montreal Impact to bring his tally to 6 on the season. Curiously enough, he has a hand in all 8 goals with 6 goals and 2 assists. Look, I mean, there's no question he's a superstar and he's very much the straw that stirs the drink. I wonder, though, are we at all worried that goals aren't coming from other sources?
Yeah, I think that you should definitely be worried that goals aren't coming from other sources. Sebastian Giovinco was brought in to be this sort of genius player, and he's living up to that expectation. But at this point, he's a genius player that's probably going to go to Euros, and at the very least, you need to be concerned about it because he could miss up to maybe 6 games, I think it is, when he is probably gone in June, given his performance so far this year. So you definitely have to be concerned about it. And I know Greg has said that he's not going to rest Sebastian yet, that it's too early. We're only 8 games into the season. But part of me thinks that if they're not going to bring in another striker between now and the time that the teams leave, then and he leaves and Jozy Altidore leaves probably about the same time, then they should be trying to rest them every little once in a while, especially when they're, say, up 2-0, because you need to get somebody like a Tsubasa Endo or a Moba Bouley into the game. And then you want to hope that, you know, you got to put more pressure on somebody like a Jonathan Osorio, who played very, very well last week, but didn't put the ball in the back of the net. And those guys need to sort of be hitting their stride when Giovinco leaves for Euros.
See, I reckon you burn them out now, right? You play them every minute you can, because you know what? I agree, he might well go to Euro, but he's playing 10 minutes a game there. So he'll come back refreshed for the end of the season. It's going to work out perfectly, you watch. He'll get called up and be all this panic, oh no, what now? But he'll come back after barely playing at all for Italy at that Euro, and he'll just be so refreshed, he'll just come back and score 12 goals in 10 games.
Well, to be fair, he's probably going to play a lot of games at Euro with Italy, you know, going to the final.
Yeah, I wasn't suggesting they go out early. I was suggesting that, you know, as much as he's wonderful to watch at MLS, I don't think he's going to be a go-to guy for Conte, but he'll be certainly an impact sub. So that's fine, 10 minutes per game. So
all right,
at least 30 minutes you'll get there, right?
Sure.
Maybe far more, in your opinion. So. But in that case, Jozy Altidore, Laura, he's played actually, I think, pretty well. He's almost a forgotten man right now for a DP. He's being quite selfless in that role. Is there a concern, though, that he's not at least finding some way to goal and scoring some goals? Because, you know, when they signed him, it was thought that he would provide, you know, a pretty decent offensive output.
Yeah, and I mean, he did all right last year. What did he have, like 13 goals, yeah, I think, right, it was? And he's played, I think part of the reason that you worry about Jozy not putting the ball in the back of the net, but at the same time, I think that he and Sebastian are playing better together this season than they played last season. And I think that was something that the team sort of struggled with, finding a use for both of them. And maybe that's the use that they found for Jozy. That being said, I think if that's the use that they found for Jozy, then they're using him wrong, because he is meant to be a striker and you need him to be putting those at least those 13 goals away this season as well, and maybe hopefully more, because I think that a lot of people think that that output was a little bit too few last season. You can't have all the pressure resting on Giovinco's shoulders. Now he's doing very well with it on his shoulders, and I don't think he would want to be off the field, but I think that Jozy needs to still step it up. And it's hard to say that, because he has played really well so far this season. I think that he's been a great support. He's a great hold-up player, and he's done really well to lay off the ball, but he's a striker, and at the end of the day, you want a striker to score goals, and he hasn't done that.
What's been your impression of the way that Greg Vanney has deployed Michael Bradley? Because it seems, you know, as a byproduct of really wanting to sort of establish this defensive identity, he's not that he's curtailed Michael's attacking instincts, but he's really sort of dropped him deep, almost as a third center back at times, and it seems like it's been pretty effective.
Yeah, and I think it's been working out really well for the team. I do find myself like sort of watching the games and thinking like Michael should not be that far back on the field, but it's going really well for them, especially with Will playing right in front of Michael. I think that is one of the best midfield twosomes in the league right now. So when it's not broke, don't fix it. I don't think we're necessarily used to seeing Michael in this role, but I talked to him early in the season. He was prepared to play this role. He knew that this was going to happen, and he was happy to be that person for Toronto FC, and I think that's what they need right now. Maybe that'll change as they come home and as the team becomes more confident in their own defensive abilities. Maybe they won't need to rely on Michael so much, but the defenders have all come out and sort of said that they really like having those two, especially Michael and also Will Johnson, sitting in front of them. And I think right now it's a little bit of a safety net for the back line. As the season progresses, I think you'll see Michael becoming more of the typical offensive player that we're used to seeing. But for now, I think that he's just offering that little bit of extra support that a team that did let in 58 goals last season sort of needs.
I'll be remiss not to mention to our listeners here that Laura's also a huge fan of Arsenal Football Club. She's a diehard Gooner her entire life. Laura, how's the season been so far?
That's not very nice.
Sorry, had to get it in there.
It was going well for like 15 minutes.
February, you're in first place for a week, eh? It was February, back in February, yeah. First place for 1 week. And then
I was in Houston that weekend and I got up at 6 o'clock in the morning to watch right. Arsenal beat Leicester. It was a great day.
Oh boy, dear oh dear. There's always next year with Arsenal, right? There's always next year. Laura, thank you so much for this. Really appreciate it. You can follow Laura on Twitter at Laura Army. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Laura.
Yeah, it's always next year. Before we go, got to mention quickly the Champions League this past week, J-Mo.
Yes.
We know City, Real Madrid, it's actually a really good result for City, I think. But going back to Spain, there's some big issues there.
Yeah.
Not a great game.
No, that was pretty dire to watch. Unlike the Atletico Bayern game, which even though it was a one-goal game, it was still very entertaining. And what a goal by Sal. Oh, my goodness.
Incredible goal.
Great.
And what a performance
skill
by that team. Now, let me ask you this, though. I want to ask you this. I saw someone asking the question on Twitter. If you're a fan of any other team, you know, say in the Premier League, for example, and there's rumours of Simeone coming over to the Premier League, would you be happy to see that style of football played at your club? Because, listen, it's successful, and I don't begrudge Atletico or Simeone one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the most entertaining to watch.
Would I begrudge it? No, not at all. And I actually wrote about this yesterday on my blog for sportsnet.ca. I don't think they get enough credit for their attacking sort of inventiveness. I mean, there's no question that the team's success was built on the reputation of Diego Simeone wanting to build a solid defensive foundation and be well organized. They've only conceded, I think, like 16 goals or something ridiculous in La Liga. But they've got brilliant attacking players. Antoine Griezmann, I mean, you know, how fantastic has he been this year? Saul was that run yesterday was absolutely.
It's one of the
brilliant.
Best goals I've ever seen in the Champions League.
Yeah, it really
it's up there.
Was.
It's really up there.
I mean, he took on three or four Bayern players and kind of weaved in and out of them before curling in that beautiful shot. Fernando Torres hit the post yesterday again. I thought very effective on the counterattack. So it's this isn't like Greece at Euro 24. This team can attack. They're just very selective and. And they've got some brilliant attacking players, and they've long had some attacking players. So if Diego Simeone wanted to come in and coach my team and wanted to bring in this style, absolutely have no problem with it at all.
It's amazing watching Torres starting huge games in the Champions League semifinals.
Mm.
This is a guy that we wrote off about 5 years ago, right?
Six.
He's a cockroach. He never goes away. He's going to be playing forever in huge games.
Yeah, very well.
I give the guy all the credit in the world because everyone wrote him off.
He's got staying power.
He's done. Yeah. He's got staying power. Yeah, it's quite impressive. And that, like I said, a wonderful performance. I, as an Arsenal fan, you root for Arsenal in the Premier League. I just think I wonder how many Gunners fans would accept that style compared to what they've been watching the last number of years, despite the lack of trophies.
Yeah, well, I mean, but that's the key, James. I wonder if the lack of trophies and the lack of success over the last decade would sort of sway Arsenal supporters in saying, okay, we've tried at Arsenal's way for long enough. Let's go another route.
And for those longtime Arsenal fans, you had a wonderful team under a guy called George Graham, who played as defensive
a
style of football you'll ever see.
And
that's
right.
Why people embraced Wenger when he arrived, because, wow, finally we're attacking. But they were very successful under George Graham. And listen, that was pretty ugly to watch, unless you were, of course, an Arsenal fan. Juventus, by the way, got to mention quickly, you're Juventus.
Yes.
You're a team you really support.
Yes.
Fifth straight Scudetto.
Yeah. Incredible.
Another Scudetto.
You just caught me off guard. Incredible when you think about the start to their season, because October 30th, they were 11th place and like 12 points out or something like that. They had a really poor start to the season. And Napoli was playing really well with Gonzalo Higuain scoring goals. So this was Yeah, I treasure all the Scudetto victories, but this one is especially special just for the way that they kind of came back. And let's not forget who they lost in the offseason. Vidal, mm-hmm. Pirlo, Carlos Tevez, and they really kind of rebounded and reinvented themselves a little bit. So, complimenti, as the Italians say.
Wait till they lose Paul Pogba this summer. Woo, watch out.
Never going to happen. They'll keep him.
Premier League on Sportsnet this weekend. On Saturday, West Brom, West Ham at 9:30 at the same time as Everton, Bournemouth. Those games in Sportsnet and Sportsnet 1. And the late one, Arsenal against Norwich on Sportsnet. And don't forget, Monday is the big one as well on Sportsnet. It's Chelsea against Spurs. Maybe Leicester will be crowned champion that day if Spurs lose. We'll find out. Should be a great weekend. Our thanks to our guests. J-Mo, as always, great job. We'll chat to you on Monday. Cheers for listening.
Cheers.